This book is for anybody who wants more out of life, which in reality should be all of us, right? Some of us fall on the spectrum of feeling overwhelmed by the seemingly endless number of tasks and obligations you have to fulfill. I get that. I've been there, and I still get there from time to time. All the time, actually. It's a never-ending journey. Some of us fall on the spectrum of having already achieved a certain level of mastery over our time and productivity, and we're just seeking a different nugget or two that can help achieve even more mastery. Again, it's an ongoing journey, and I dig that. That's the type of person I identify with, always searching and digging, because a true master realizes that the journey is never ending. Those of you who paid attention in school might remember that the second law of thermodynamics basically states that everything left neglected and unattended moves towards decay and disorder. There really is no in between. You're either living or you're dying. Living is moving towards progression. Dying is staying stagnant. There really is no such thing as stagnation. So the takeaway from that law of nature for our own lives is that we should always be pushing ourselves to grow just a little bit each day. Whatever end of the spectrum you fall, the fact of the matter is that how we view and utilize our time is arguably the singular determining factor and determine whether or not we will achieve the things we have set in our hearts as goals and desires. And I believe we're all born with a certain respect for time in one regard, but as I'll explain later, many of us go through life without a true understanding and appreciation for time until it's too late. When you talk about time, you have to talk about energy, productivity, and management, because the ability to maximize those things is a valuable skill beyond measure. So the goal of this book is to introduce to some, reinforce to others, and to bring a greater understanding to all about these core elements that create our lives. Chapter 1, What's Going On? Marvin Gaye is the greatest music artist of all time. That is not up for debate. But that's a discussion for another time. Back in 1971, Marvin released a seminal song called What's Going On that was aimed at taking a look at the state of the world in which he lived. I don't know if Marvin ever got his answer, but the real impact was really felt in the question, what's going on? So many of us waste precious time because we are never conscious of the questions we should be asking ourselves to get to the answers that we seek in the essence of our being. Questions are wonderful and essential. They are also underappreciated and underutilized because of the fact that it demonstrates a lack of knowledge, which goes against our pride of self. Questions can be troublesome because at times knowing that you just might actually get an answer. Legendary television figures like the late great Larry King are lauded and win awards simply because they know how to ask the right questions, and perhaps more impressively, follow up with the right questions after they get an answer. In the Bible, Jesus the Christ was so fond of questions that he answered questions with questions. Go read the Gospels for yourself and observe just how Jesus astutely controls his dialogue with thought-provoking questions. That example alone shows me, myself, and should show you how powerful and effective questions can be. Now, it's kind of a silly example, but one of my favorite movies is titled The 40-Year-Old Virgin. In one particular scene, the title character played by Steve Carell hilariously attempts to use a line of questioning as a means of interacting with a woman of interest to him, per the instructions of an associate of his, basically like his coach at the time. Despite a rather awkward delivery, his approach works nonetheless, and he scores a date with the young lady. Now again, while that's a rather extreme and silly example, it underscores the principle of asking the right questions. Why are questions so important? Self-development giant Tony Robbins said that asking the right questions can make all the difference in your life. It is a key ingredient in the formula for success in the lives of many achievers. They have developed the skill of not just asking any question, but asking the right question to get the right answer. No matter how it is revealed, the answer begins from within themselves. If you have any desire to improve your life, then you must start with the question, what's going on, to yourself? What's going on with my health? What's going on with my relationships? What's going on with my finances? What's going on with my emotional state of being? Like Napoleon Hill said, who wrote the great book, Think and Grow Rich, the starting point of all achievement is desire. If we have the desire to improve any area of our lives, are we ready and willing to put our life under the scrutiny of examination about where our time is being spent? That is a vital question to ask yourself, because if you're not, then you have to really question your desire to begin with. These questions can only come from within, and the answer also only lies within. There are those whose opinion we value, whom we deem is worthy of holding us to some accountability, and those people may ask or spark questions for us to ponder. But again, ultimately, that resolution of mind can only come from your true desires within you. The reality for the vast majority of people is that they have made the decisions that they've made in life largely based on the expectations other people, like parents or mentors or the community at large, which they came from, had for them. Selah. Pause and think about that. The Bible, and especially in Psalms, you'll see the phrase Selah. That means pause and think. So I'll say that a few times. Again, let me repeat that. The reality for the vast majority of people is that they have made the decisions that they've made in life largely based on the expectations other people, like parents or mentors or the community at large, which they came from, had for them. Selah. It can be a shocking and jarring experience for us to come to the realization that we don't know what we truly want in all aspects of our lives. We just know that what we currently have is not in harmony with our inner being. The good news about self-analysis with questions is that once you download into your brain a question with feeling and intent, your subconscious mind goes to work for you to find that answer and to express it somehow in your life. Another good thing is that from that place and through that realization, we can start to systematically make a change. That change starts with the right questions, such as what's going on in my life? What is working for me? What is not working for me? Who am I? Where am I? And where am I going? What truly makes me happy? What gives me the most energy? When do I have the most energy? What gives me the most joy? Where are my gifts and abilities best served? Where do I thrive? Where do I present the most value? How do I present the most value? Who responds to me most favorably? What would I do with my time if I never had to worry about money again? These are just a few examples of serious introspective questions that achievers are adept at presenting to themselves and sitting with honestly and transparently, no matter how uncomfortable. When we ask ourselves these questions and we take inventory of our lives, we will usually find that the origins of these issues are based somehow, some way, on how we spend our time. Chapter 2, The Commodity That Is Time. An early mentor of mine profoundly stated to me once, and it was kind of just an off-the-cuff expression, but it really captured my attention. I never forgot it. He stated that you'll never, and he put emphasis on the never, you'll never meet a poor man, or woman in this case, who truly values his time. Now, at first, I thought that to be a bit of a hyperbolic statement, an overstatement. Never, like ever, you'll never meet a poor man who truly values his time. Yet, as time has passed, my observations and experiences have multiplied, and I'll be damned if I have not found that statement to be absolutely true, or at least not disproven as of yet. You'll never meet a poor man who truly values their time. Selah. Now, let me note, it is worth noting that there are individuals who are totally content with their life, no matter if they're unhealthy, inharmonious in relationships, and living in basically financial captivity. You could argue that they value their time, albeit in a manner that actually devalues themselves. It's also worth noting that there are factions of people, and I'm not going to look up any data, but there are factions of people who adopt the simplest of lifestyles and don't participate in capitalism, consumerism, classism, and they value their time living their idea of peace. You have minimalists, people who have just totally shunned the normal modern lifestyle. You could argue that those people value their time in a different way, but we're going to disregard that. If you're reading this, then obviously that is not you. Let's be clear. You and mostly everybody, and everybody, we want shit. We want to do shit. We want to feel like the shit. We want to see shit. But see, when I say shit, the shit runs deeper than just any one experience, material possession, or position. And we basically want to have maximum control over how we go about that. Underachievers rarely value anything that has been freely given to them, whether that be their innate talents and gifts, their possessions, or the most precious possession of all, which is their time. Time is the most important commodity we have. And I stress the importance of looking at time as a commodity, not unlike gold or oil. Because like gold or oil, time is exchanged and traded. It can be compounded for maximum returns or produce diminishing returns. Time can be squandered or it can be used as a seed for future harvests. And while time can't be regained, it can be redeemed, so to speak. That is just a bit of the essence of what time is. Time is a force that perpetuates change in our lives. That is simply a law that can't be refuted and has proven itself to us over and over. Yet, how is it that so many of us seem so unprepared for the changes and the results thereof from the passage of time? Now, let me say, I'm always encouraged by people who live in constant gratitude in spite of all their various hardships. I've personally seen too many times the amazing resiliency of the human spirit in the face of the most unimaginable occurrences. I've also, though, on the other hand, observed a dying man's eyes at the realization of how his time had been spent brought him to his deathbed in the manner that it did. This particular person that I'm thinking of, it was a life-changing experience to see him on his deathbed, knowing him before and then seeing him arrive at his deathbed at a pretty young age, you know, before his 60th birthday. He said it wasn't supposed to be this way. He could vividly remember just being young. He was full of stories of when he was young and dumb. He can vividly remember being a young, ambitious man with dreams. And now he was gravely ill. He was a gravely ill, middle-aged man who had partied, worried, and procrastinated his years away. And I could see him just now sitting there, and he's like, man, it was just like a vape. He's doing his hand like a vapor, like smoke. He's like, man, it was just like yesterday, and it just whittled away. And I looked in his eyes, and there's a lot of regret there. Regret is a heavy burden to take to the grave, and it's even heavier when the regret is a result of the things that we failed to do because of how we spent our time. Again, if you're reading this, if you're listening to this, you have a desire to make the most out of your life, and your life is made up of a series of decisions on how you use your time. When I've said that statement to other people about you'll never meet a poor person, and poor can be poor in spirit, poor in mind, poor in relationships, and not just money. But you can always trace that back to somebody who doesn't truly value their time. And the people, when I've said that to other people, they've argued with me about that. But I choose not to argue back. I know that if you make certain decisions with your time, you will achieve the goals that you desire. If you make adverse decisions with your time, you will end up in a place that you ultimately did not intend to go. Again, if you're listening to this, if you have a desire to make the most out of your life, and your life is made up of a series of decisions on how you use your time, arguably the two most important decisions we make are the exchange of our time for money or for significance. Some people make the decision to trade their time by way of a job in exchange for money, and there's nothing wrong with that for a season or for a time or in a certain context. However, this decision model has demonstrated more and more with the passage of time and the raising of our collective consciousness to be a model that can often miss the mark of its intended purpose. That's why I'm a big proponent of entrepreneurism in some form. Not everybody's a born entrepreneur. So many of us that have used this decision model find ourselves on the losing end of the trade because our most precious commodity is being traded for a disproportionately small amount of money. Again, Selah. Pause and think on that. I'll say it again. So many of us have made the decision to trade our time for money by way of a job and find ourselves on the losing end of the trade, because our most precious commodity is being traded for a disproportionately small amount of money. Furthermore, we usually find ourselves on the losing side of the trade in the way of significance as well, because by and large, only the rare individual performs a job that they truly love and get fulfillment from. The even rarer individual combines their knowledge, connections, experience, and a strong belief, and makes the decision to exchange their time by way of entrepreneurial pursuits. Now, again, while I can acknowledge that true significance and happiness can only come from within, no matter what occupation or endeavor or material possessions you have, there is usually a correlation between how you control your destiny with your time and the significance that you feel. When you make the decision to become an entrepreneur, basically to control your destiny, there are sacrifices that you make, and you may find yourself with even less time than you had before as an employee. But the satisfaction that you get from knowing that you are in control, that you can ultimately set yourself up at a certain point in time to where you are completely free with your time to spend however you want it, whether that be with family and loved ones or pursuing other passions and purposes that aren't necessarily revenue producing, brings a satisfaction beyond comprehension. And you don't have to wait until you're 65 to retire. And we know that nowadays the retirement age is even beyond 65 for a lot of us. Inevitably, you'll find that you'll have a desire to help others and to really create value in the world. And that is the ultimate destination of significance and happiness. It's not all about you. It's not all about me. My philosophy of entrepreneurism is that you're trading your time to create more time. Is there a sacrifice? Absolutely. You'll probably end up working more for yourself than you will for somebody else, but there's so much freedom in that. There's a satisfaction that you just can't quantify with a dollar amount or with the numbers on the clock. There's an old adage about entrepreneurism that says the true entrepreneur is willing to live his life like others won't, so that they can eventually live their life like others can't. That's always a winning trade when you trade your time to ultimately create more time for yourself. Again, let me acknowledge, not everybody is made to be an entrepreneur, but I believe we are all full of way more potential and have way more value than some of us believe that we do. You can approach your current job or profession with more of a boss mentality in order to create more fulfillment. And I'll get more on that later. Chapter 3, Bloom Where You're Planted. Let's begin by addressing your ego right up front. Yes, you should be doing something more meaningful, something more impactful and lucrative. Yes, you should be your own boss. You have way more to offer the marketplace and the world. But as we've already uncovered, the right questions are what is going to cause the necessary interruption that will promote you out of your job in the right order at the right time. Questions like, have I honestly given my ideas focused action? Questions like, am I prepared to take the necessary risk? How can I reframe things and use my present job as a resource? Am I qualified to be my own boss yet? Of course, within those questions lie more questions and more layers to unpack. Those layers are sure to carve a path to freedom that will reveal itself to us little by little as we adopt new habits and new behaviors. Those new behaviors will transform into disciplines. Discipline is the force that aligns you with the mind frequency of an expanded awareness. Let me say that again. Discipline is the force that aligns you with the mind frequency of an expanded awareness. That is where you use your creative abilities that will take you to places that you can actually curate the life that you want to live. Let me say that again. That is where your creative abilities will take place so that you can actually curate the life that you want to live. This is all too important because we all have inspirational figures. Most of us do. We all have inspirational figures that we choose to model after. Usually, there is an image with some accompanying rewards associated with that image that compels us. The trouble you'll see from time to time, again with aspiring entrepreneurs is when that image, while compelling, is not fully compatible with how we are wired. Simply put, we chase endeavors based on appearance. Perhaps we've been witness to the achievements of others in that same endeavor and the perks that come along with it. What we aren't always aware of are the intricacies that comprise that position on a macro and micro level. The lifestyle of that position may simply not harmonize with our spirit and produce the right energy and motivation within us to do the best job possible. That is the quickest way to discontentment. That is the quickest way to imminent failure, financial ruin, and depending on your perspective, simply time wasted in a field that is not for you. Now, don't get me wrong, any experience you go through can be used to extract important lessons for yourself and for others, but it stands to reason that if you can avoid the pitfalls altogether and save yourself from using the precious commodity that is time, it makes sense to do so. A smart man learns from his mistakes. A truly wise man learns from the mistakes of others. So many times we feel the need to charge ahead with the urges from our ideas because we don't want to waste time. And then that is exactly what we end up doing. Staying planted so that you can bloom more abundantly before you move to a bigger pot can serve you well. It's all in the attitude that you approach your job with. You can have a physically intensive job, but you don't have to do it laboriously. Think about that. Selah. Pause. You can have a physically intensive job, but you don't have to do it laboriously. I'm a proponent of deep breathing to center the mind and always stay present. When you're performing a physical task, it's no different. When you're performing a physical task, breathe deeply through it. Try to find a place in your mind of gratitude, of perspective, of centeredness. This will prove to be an increasingly effective practice as you forge ahead on your journey and level up. This centeredness, this increased awareness, will give you the mental bandwidth to begin receiving ideas and intuition. Perhaps you'll begin to find solutions to everyday challenges in your job. This can be an opportunity for a promotion, or better yet, the opportunity to convert your employer into a partner or a client. This is absolutely possible. And there are no shortage of stories of entrepreneurs who were able to extract the good from their present job and turn it into an opportunity. Bloom where you're planted. Chapter 4, Control Your Goals. The first time I listened to Earl Nightingale's The Stranger's Secret, it completely changed my life. Everything he said was so simple yet so profound. I felt as if he was articulating what I already knew in my heart, but didn't have the expanded awareness yet to know how to interpret or express. One such simple profundity was, people with goals succeed because they know where they're going. I mean, we all know that, right? We all have goals, right? There goes those questions again. Do we really have goals? I had to ask myself that. Do I really have goals? And I had to admit, I didn't have a clear, definite goal. And I certainly didn't have it written down. I had it in my heart that I wanted to be rich and live a life of freedom. I wanted to own property and businesses. That was the so-called goal, but I didn't control it, meaning I didn't first make it mine by committing it to writing. So like Habakkuk 2:2 states, write the vision, make it plain. I decided to actually do just that. And I'll be damned, just writing my goals down for the first time was more of an arduous task than I anticipated. It's actually stupidly simple and mystical at the same time. I can't really explain it, but I will describe in greater detail the principle behind writing things down. The key is, again, as the scripture says, making it plain, making it simple, precise, according to what you really like and what really resonates within your spirit. Not what you think somebody else's idea is. That is one of the single most attributes that successful people demonstrate: single-minded focus and alternative independent thinking. That's where the discovery takes place and leads you down your unique path that is totally compatible with your God-given gifts. He already factors in your so-called deficiencies. He already factors in your fuck-ups. Your time is maximized when that vision is plain, simple, and clear, and will guide every decision and every moment. That is the essence of getting more from your 24. Every hour, every minute will become precious and intentional. I can't think of a better way than getting things done in writing and leaving it open for revision as you grow and evolve and learn more about yourself. So, more questions come. How much property and businesses do I want to own? By when? How do I plan to go about achieving this? What does the first step towards that look like? Where am I currently in relation to achieving that goal? How will it feel to achieve this goal? And can I visualize it? Can I feel it? Now, let me go to the more metaphysical side of goals and add another more important question that undoubtedly helps to clearly identify our definite goal. Is this goal what I really, truly want? Or am I really after the feeling that I think that achieving the goal will give me? Is this goal what I really, truly want? Or am I really after the feeling that I think that achieving that goal will give me? Deeper questions are still coming all the time. This is an ongoing journey till this very day, because we know that change is constant and goals are not immutable. The key to it all, well, at least from personal experience, is embracing an attitude that goal-chasing behavior is its own reward, knowing that you'll likely end up somewhere that doesn't quite fit your goal description. Now, if you can accept that, life becomes more of a game. The unfolding of things you can't even anticipate lead to an adventure of a life. For all of the goal setting and subsequent action we do, ultimately there is a detachment from the outcome of our actions that has to occur. Examine the lives of successful people and invariably you'll find example after example of serendipity, luck, and so-called coincidences that simply cannot be accounted for. Kevin Trudeau says that these happenings are off the radar screen. They are bigger and better than you can even anticipate. Some say you create your own luck out of your own efforts. But I'm getting off topic. The point is that having goals, clearly defined goals, is the next necessary step for achievement right after simply first having the desire. Writing them down, not typing, writing is necessary. It just is. You can say that it unlocks a certain energy on a metaphysical level. You can also consider the neuroscientific perspective and know that when you write something down, there are a number of brain waves activated that otherwise would not. This is how you take ownership of your goals. They become real, living entities. They will be the influence behind your decisions. Large goals will break down into digestible, small, daily goals. Those small, daily goals will shape the larger goals because adjustments will have to be inevitable. The important thing is that you're in control of your goal and your vision in order to be able to always pivot properly and stay headed in the right direction. I'll repeat. Once a goal is defined and committed to writing, it becomes a real living entity. It breathes life. Therefore, you must not suffocate that life away by leaving it on a piece of paper tucked away, never to be looked at again. On the contrary, keep those goals in front of you. If you really want to dance with the universe, rewrite your goals often. Some people write them every single day. Now, I know there is somebody listening to this thinking that they don't have the time or how lovely it is to use the little time they have for worthy goals, or you simply don't know where to start. That is totally common and legitimate. However, if you're listening to this, if you're reading this, that most likely means that you're an achiever with a creative mind who is willing to find creative solutions. That's how you have to reframe it. You find creative solutions to problems. If you think that you're not, then you need to put yourself in that mind frame. You have to tell yourself that because, quite frankly, the money, the significance, and the purpose lies in problem solving. You may be surprised to find that the problem you solve for yourself leads to your prosperity and your purpose, because the problem you solve for yourself can be the problem you solve for others. In the scriptures, the book of Ecclesiastes says to sow your seed and give a servant to seven, maybe eight. I find it interesting that the book says that, because we know through extensive research and data that the average millionaire has seven streams of income. Now, whether you're spiritual or not, ancient wisdom is hard to refute. So with that said, I have found from my own self-experimentation and from the observation of others that the best way to get to any point in your life is simply to get moving. That's also the hardest part. But if you can get in your mind to just get past zero and not look to 100, simply get out of neutral and do something for a set amount of time. If you're like me and you have various interests that you don't know exactly what to focus on, or you have several projects going on at one time, just knock one out. Be committed to bringing things to completion. There's a hard drive clearance in your brain that is very valuable to get you to the next point. It adds momentum, energy, and confidence to your game, your overall arsenal. Many of you will be familiar with this concept, but allow me to emphasize an excellent framework for approaching goals, and that is with the concept of SMART goals. First introduced into the lexicon by George T. Doran in 1981, this criteria for creating objectives remains, in my opinion, the most comprehensive and practical approach to setting goals. Specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, time-bound. SMART. Specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, time-bound. Google returns close to 800,000 results from a search of smart goals, so there's plenty of material to digest on that subject. I just want to emphasize the time-bound aspect of smart goals, because obviously if you're reading this, you want something more out of life. You want to maximize your moments. Chapter 5, Sprint Up the Hill. When you talk about getting the most done in the least amount of time, the king of exercises to me is hill sprints. Walter Payton and Jerry Rice are known as two of the most well-conditioned and durable football players of all time, and hill sprints were a staple of their workout regimen. You know how I know hill sprints are an underrated but powerful conditioning tool? You really don't see a ton of articles raving about hill sprints. There's not a ton of video content about them relative to other forms of conditioning. So why do you think that is? It's always good sometimes to be in the minority, and you can go to any local park at any time with a decent sized steep hill, and I guarantee you, you won't find hardly a soul doing hill sprints. Just look for yourself. Now, doesn't that spark the ultimate motivation inside? It does for me, knowing that I'm doing things that others won't do, others aren't doing and won't do. I only run them for a season, usually from spring to fall because of the weather, the conditions, and I feel like that time I dedicate to forcefully exerting my body against the resistance of the hill. I use a 40-pound or 80-pound weighted vest, carries my fitness for the entire year, as long as I continue to practice healthy eating habits. And trust me, if you decide and to dedicate yourself to sprinting hills, your body will force you to eat properly. You'll literally be able to feel the energy of your food and know how your body will respond to the food that you put in your body. If you put the wrong thing in your body will likely express a harsh rebuttal during your next hill sprint session. I like to run hills in a fasted state, and even in a fasted state, I almost always end my hill sprint sessions vomiting something out. That's how much I push myself. My workout never lasts more than 25 minutes, and after those 25 minutes, I'm absolutely spent. But the reward is that I accomplish so much more with my body in that period of time than I could spend an hour and a half doing with traditional workouts. So that's just me. I just had to say that. That's just me and my biology. I think that would be a gem. I believe that could be a golden nugget for someone who wants to level up their health and wellness. I always recommend hill sprints. But I'm not really here to give fitness advice. Far be it from me. I have been able to glean a profound principle in relation to hill sprints and the parallel to accelerating towards our goals. I'll admit that in my younger years, I was one who always was looking for loopholes and shortcuts, life hacks. And to some degree, that is a valuable attribute. You don't always want to take shortcuts. You can't always take shortcuts. But there's a valuable attribute to looking for an easier way to do things, and that's how innovation occurs. It's how we increase efficiency and solve problems on a grander scale. The thing I learned about shortcuts in many cases is there is a trade-off. There's the sacrifice. The sacrifice in order to get somewhere faster, it requires a bit more focused action. Just like it's not easy to force your body up against a steep hill, it's not easy for many of us to really concentrate hard on something for just a brief period of time. 30 minutes to an hour of deep work, to steal a phrase from Cal Newport, can put you light years ahead of the average person who only wishes to achieve the things that you'll be capable of doing. Hill sprints are simple and basic. Just run up as fast as you can, walk or jog back down. Take a minute to breathe and do it again. Repeat that to the capacity that you can reasonably handle. Focus work is simple and basic. Shut off all distractions, have a clear plan on what you will focus on, and get to it, forsaking all distractions. As a tip, do this first thing in the morning on an empty stomach. Put on some classical music and have a cup of coffee, whatever serves you best. Set the mood, set the atmosphere. Set your timer for an hour and just plug away. When the timer goes off, get up, walk away from the work, and reward yourself. This trains your mind to do hard things while incentivizing the process. Just like you won't find many people running hills at the park, you won't find many individuals who devote just 1 hour of focused attention to something that will move their life or their business forward. At least not with as much discipline and with as much consistency. If they only knew the power and the efficacy behind this effort, before you know it, it will look like you have taken a quantum leap in such a short amount of time. The reality is that your apparent quantum leap is simply the eventual outcome of sustained, focused effort. What you'll find in that focused effort is that you'll hit a stride and a rhythm that you can label as in the zone or in the flow. Chapter 6, Getting the Band Together. At this juncture of the book, I really feel the need to share something with those who graciously took the time to read or hear what I have to say. I didn't put much thought into these chapter titles. I knew what I wanted to cover, and the first phrase that came into my mind is what it is. With that said, this divine inspiration of thought is pretty appropriate as a title, I must say. Follow me now. I hope I don't lose you. Think about a band, or at least the romanticized depiction of the classic garage band. It may begin with a lone guitar player. Perhaps that lone guitar player writes his own songs and even sings the songs he writes, but he knows that's not his strongest suit. Nevertheless, he keeps plucking and singing away, until one day he and a drummer connect at an open mic. One thing leads to another, and the drummer brings his singing buddy along, and boy, can that dude or that lady sing. Not only can they sing, but they can program the keyboard and play some decent chords and riffs. This is starting to shape into something that can catch people's attention. More importantly, you all are becoming a strong collection of talent working towards a common goal. With this synergy happening, the goal starts to become clearer and closer, and eventually, you're crushing it together. You've heard the phrase, teamwork makes the dream work. Well, let me tell you about how teams work to actually make the dream work. They think big. There has to be a common goal big enough that makes everyone involved feel as though it's well worth it for them to sacrifice themselves and put others before their personal inconvenience. I mean, let's be honest, big goals are just plain more exciting. You know what else is a big secret I wish I would have discovered much earlier in life? It is that big goals take the same amount of effort as small goals. You know why? Well, there are a number of reasons, but for one, big goals tend to attract bigger players who think on a bigger, higher level. Bigger goals inherently involve a higher level of savvy and sophistication, which is the level at which we all ultimately want to operate on. Going after bigger goals will force the best out of everybody involved because the incentive is there to do so. Sure, there may be more hands-on in the pot, but if you're dividing up a larger piece of pie, it's essential to have a large enough team to allow everybody to work in their core competency. Smaller deals tend to attract smaller thinkers who can often bog things down with trivial details. It's just a fact. Teams think ahead. You've probably heard axioms like dress for the job you want, not the job you have, or something like plan for the business you want, not the business you currently have, or something to that effect. That is simply just thinking and planning ahead. In regards to your team, that can take on a few different forms. One form that I stress a lot, and after hundreds of consultation calls with small business owners, seems to be a huge problem, is systems. I'm a huge stickler for systems in my own dealings, and again, it's the number one thing that I see as the barrier for growth for entrepreneurs in any field. It's a huge bottleneck. So how do systems affect the team? Well, let's take a step back and talk about systems for a moment. Systems are simply a way of doing things to get things done. It can involve a number of components to accomplish a goal or task. The thing is, you already have a system. We have systems for everything we do, basically. When you go to your kitchen to make a meal, you have pots and pans, utensils, and food ingredients all in certain places, and it's likely that they always are in those same certain places. Well, that's a form of a system. It's a set way of how things are arranged and applied to accomplish a task. Now, in order to level up your game for you and your team, it's important to take a step back and analyze every single thing that gets done in your business and document it. This doesn't have to be as hard as it may seem. Depending on what you're doing, you can turn on a camera and record yourself or record your screen. You can take screenshots or pictures and or type out specific instructions. The point is to have documentation of what are the essential tasks that happen to make you, your team, and your operations function. From there, you'll be able to optimize those processes for maximum productivity and efficiency. Now you're thinking ahead, not only for the team that you currently have, even if you don't actually have a team yet, but for the team that you plan to have. You also have to consider the fact that people will move on, so having a system allows you to seamlessly plug someone else into their role and not skip a beat. Your current team will appreciate the clarity and organization involved in their specific roles, and more importantly, you're thinking ahead for them to grow beyond their current roles. That's the next form that thinking ahead takes, empowering your team for the next step. Hopefully, that next step is within your organization or alongside you as a partner of some kind. Which leads me to my next point. Teams think deep. As a team leader, it is very necessary to show the most amount of empathy and genuine concern for your team. It's critical to stay grounded and mindful of the ones who make the engine run, especially as things change and scale up and scale outward. Bonuses and incentives will always be in vogue. Remember that. Simply being intentional about doing quick check-ins with as many team members with regular frequency can sow harmonious seeds. Also, as previously mentioned, you want to empower your team members and support their own personal dreams and goals. More than likely, you'll find a good number of your team members whose goals and dreams are directly aligned with yours and in it with you for the long run. And that's wonderful. Take good care of those team members. You'll also likely encounter a number of more ambitious team members who see you as a launching pad or stepping stone to their own endeavors. and that's totally fine too. You should support that as well. The point is to be proactive in knowing what kind of personnel you're dealing with and create an environment of open, honest transparency where that can be communicated. More than likely, you'll have to face a number of pivot points, if not total abandonment, of some of your dreams. You quite possibly could fail at something that really meant something to you and really took a significant chunk of your time and energy and whatever else you spent. Chapter 7, Do the Right Thing. I'll save you some time reading this chapter because it's a simple concept. Your constant focus should primarily be on more than just getting things done, but getting the right things done in the right order and in the right manner. Easy enough stated, more difficult to execute for many of us. But not so much when you apply some simple thought models towards getting things done, which I'll further explain in detail. I always used to think that preachers and motivational speakers were corny when they would introduce acrostics or alliterations, but damn it, they are effective because it makes the information stick. Therefore, I present the four A's of doing the right things. That's right, the four A's of doing the right things. That's action, analysis, adjustment, and administration. Action. Now, take note of the fact that action comes before analysis. Most people will analyze first before action and end up in a state that many call analysis paralysis. I've been there plenty of times myself and continue to find myself there at times. Then I remember to just act and analyze the results afterwards. Don't get me wrong, there's certainly value in making plans and not jumping into ideas kamikaze style, head first. However, you have to set some type of parameters or deadlines as to how much planning you're going to do. In some cases, the action is planning and putting things down on paper, but after that, get to it. I'm a huge proponent of imperfect action because it can be too easy to rationalize inaction. The reason why we fail to take action is because we're hung up on the outcome when the reality is that we have absolutely no control over the outcome. You have to know that. Therefore, we can only take ownership of our inputs, our action. Analysis. Only after you've done your part with controlling the input, which is taking some sort of action, can you analyze the results thereof. What are you analyzing? You analyze the who, what, where, when, why, and how of the action, and what were the results. Adjustment. From the analysis, you're able to adjust the who, the what, the where, when, why, and how of the action. Simple as that. Administration. This is where you implement putting systems in place and or delegating the actions to the right people. This may involve assigning tasks to team members, hiring contractors or consultants, or it may be the use of tools like software or automation. The four A's is a progressive dynamic framework, meaning that you'll always find yourself in one mode or another. The important thing is to always know where you are in the cycle and to just not get stuck. I can vividly remember the first time someone told me something that they never told anybody else before. I was in fifth grade. It was a classmate of mine, and she felt the need to confide in me, of all people, about something that was going on in her life and how she felt about it. It was actually a pretty serious situation, and I told her that she probably would want to talk to an adult about it, but the fact that she came to me and told me before she said she told anybody, that was the beginning of something that has continued my entire life. I didn't have much practical advice to really give her out of my 10-year-old experiences, but I just listened intently and offered the best words of encouragement that I knew, and she was grateful for that. And to this day, she still periodically thanks me for being available at that moment. And that pattern has continued, like I said, throughout my life, with people confiding in me their deepest, darkest secrets, it seems. And I've just, over the years, have come to humbly accept that it's just some type of gift from God. I believe I am a good, active, non-judgmental listener. I seem to give good advice to people, they tell me. I hate to see people suffer. I hate to see people languish in their problems. I jokingly say, shit, I give better advice to other people than I seem to give to my damn self. To sum it up, my goal with this book is to leave you thinking a little differently about your purpose, your goals, your why, and how time shapes all of that, how your time spent shapes all of that. Let me say this, I'm glad there are people who exist or have existed that think beyond the so-called limits of human potential. That type of thinking is what has driven so many areas of innovation in our lives. I'm glad we have the exceptional athletes and artists that we have that have created such memorable moments and pieces of art for us to enjoy. You know, just the capacity we have as humans simply fascinates me. But the fact of the matter is that most of us won't do anything close to world changing. We won't have those type of accomplishments. But I do believe if everybody in their own world pushed their limits even just a tad more, dared to be just a little more audacious in their goals, and attempted to fulfill bigger purposes in their environments, then the collective consciousness of the world would begin to raise. Maybe that's my own audaciousness speaking, but I truly believe that. I'm a proponent of things like hard work, discipline, delayed gratification. Those hard, sound principles. I'm also a believer in effortless manifestation, in prayer, in meditation, in serendipity. You know, the other stuff, the woo-woo type stuff that many action-oriented achievers sometimes ignore, or if they practice it, sometimes they fail to teach others. I believe the right balance between those worlds comes down to having a clear perception of time and how it's being utilized. And with that, I present the book More From Your 24. Thank you to anybody who took the time to listen and read this book. Peace and blessings to you. If I can be of any help, resources are available at the end of the book.